Yankees Files Podcast, we are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are fans of a team about whom many people will try to convince you the sky is falling. And all of those people are wrong. I just want to get that out there real quick. They had a 500 week against Toronto and the Angels with some exciting and gratifying games, I would say, including walk-offs by Gleyber Torres and DJ LeMahieu, both of which made me very happy. Whipple, there's been a lot of negativity surrounding this team. I've been on TikTok trying to combat it. I've been on Twitter trying to combat it. Now I'm on the podcast trying to combat it. How are you feeling?
Well, you've been out on the TikTok trenches. I've been safe in my cocoon just watching the Yankees from afar. And I'm sorry I've been out there helping you. But, you know, law school calls. If you didn't know, I'm in law school. Pause for reaction.
Wait a second. Wait. That is breaking news. I mean, this is like Jock Peterson could get traded to the Yankees during this game, and it wouldn't be as big of breaking news as you telling the world that you were in law school.
Despite all of this, despite this breaking news, which I'm glad you're giving it the importance it deserves, I think I'm right there with you. Like, people generally, I think people in general, like in life, just need to calm down. But especially when talking about the Yankees playing a very tough April schedule, pitching really well, going through an offensive slump that's not unlike pretty much every offensive slump that any team has ever gone through, still winning a decent amount of games. I think we have to focus on the positives, and there's a lot of positives, and realize that despite the negatives, like, nothing is irreversible, and this team is still playing really well. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can say that this team could do better, but that's true of any team in baseball. This team's doing a lot well, and especially, again, I was texting you this morning, but the pitching staff on this team is incredible. It continues to be incredible, and the theme of the last few years is we can pretty much implicitly trust any pitcher the Yankees throw out there to provide some above average to dominant performance. And I think what I said is that people who would rather be in the alternative situation where you can hit but you can't pitch did not watch the Yankees between 2018 and 2019, because that strategy is fine.
They didn't watch the Yankees between like 2002 and 2008
also,
either.
Also fair. There have been a lot of Yankees teams that can hit and can't pitch, and that's a strategy to an early playoff exit. But just for an April performance, I mean, this team has the capability to hit a lot better. And like, some guys are still hitting really well. I think you put out that graphic where it was like you kind of analyzed each guy and, you know, your confidence in them improving, maintaining, you know, dropping. And I think the theme is that the good hitters will get better, but like the low, you know, the quote unquote low quality hitters, it's a lot better than last year. And that's specifically because Josh Donaldson, Aaron Hicks, and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa are not taking the at-bats that Oswaldo Cabrera, Oswald Peraza, and Anthony Volpe are taking, and those guys just have a higher ceiling. I mean, I will say that I was specifically wrong in the fact that you were saying, so roll it back 4 months, and we were looking at the roster, and your take was that the lineup that people are putting out and that people are afraid of is not the lineup that's going to play. And I think my take was that, well, why would we believe otherwise? And you're absolutely right. Like, you know, criticize Boone and the roster management all you want, but you know, Aaron Hicks is playing once a week. IKF is not sniffing shortstop. And Josh Donaldson's injured. And I think when he comes back, it's going to be a little bit of a different story. So I give credit to you. Like, the guys who should be playing are playing. And those guys, yes, they need to hit better. But they can hit better. And that's such a big difference from some of the other issues this team has had in the past offensively.
Yeah. So let's go through the points that you just made. Because I think, and I'm not totally not just saying this because you said that I was right about a bunch of stuff, but I like a lot of the points you made. So going into play on tonight, Monday night, the Yankees pitching staff is third in the league in Fangraphs WAR. They are second in the league in ERA, and they are fifth in the league in strikeouts per nine. So they've been extremely effective, and it's important to remember they've been this effective, also top five in FIP, without Luis Severino, without Carlos Rodon, without, you know, a number of relievers, Tommy Kahnle, Lou Trevino, Scott Efros, you know, some of whom we'll see later this year and some of whom we won't. So the pitching staff absolutely deserves credit for that. And if we think about whether or not it's reasonable to expect the pitching staff to continue to be good, given the quality of the reinforcements that are coming, I think we can expect it. And then we had the discussion of the hitting. And look, the Yankees just had a 10-game homestand where they, as a team, hit for a 79 WRC+. That sucks. Like, that is worse than 2022 IKF as a team for 10 games in a row. That's terrible. You can't do that. With that said, there are too many people believing that that is indicative of the quality of this team offensively. And it's pretty clear to me that that's not the case. So what I did is I went through the seven guys who I think you should believe in offensively who are currently on the Yankees and healthy. And those guys are Anthony Rizzo, DJ LeMahieu, Aaron Judge, Gleyber Torres, all of whom have been great this year. And then Anthony Volpe, Oswald Peraza, and Oswaldo Cabrera. So Rizzo, shift ban is helping him. He was getting shifted a lot, and his batting average on balls in play is really high, but also his expected stats are way up over last year. So believe in that. Even if the BABIP comes down a little bit, he's hitting the ball really well. He's slugging. We should love what we see from Anthony Rizzo. DJ LeMahieu, again, getting lucky on balls in play, but he traded some strikeout for some slug, and his average exit velocity and his hard hit rate have skyrocketed over where they used to be in his career. Aaron Judge, you should be confident. Why? Because he's much better than like 30% better than the average hitter. We know that. We know that over the course of his entire career. His strikeout rate is going to come down. It's like a third of the time right now. He doesn't strike out more than a quarter of the time over large samples anymore. And he, again, is vastly underperforming relative to his expected stats. His quality of contact's off the charts, and you can't systematically underperform quality of contact forever. It just doesn't happen, I promise you. Gleyber, I think you should be super excited. For the first time, really, in his career, he's walking like 1.5 times as much as he strikes out. It's unbelievable, the plate discipline he's showing. And his quality of contact has been awesome. His expected stats are all at or near career highs, which you have to love. Volpe, I think you take what you can get. He's young. He's been playing great defense. He's been really disruptive on the bases. In a lot of ways, he's been better than advertised. The main way he's been better than advertised, in my opinion, is his plate discipline. Even though he's striking out a ton, the fact that he's walking as much as he is, especially his confidence taking close pitches, has been really encouraging. If you believe that the bat-to-ball skill is going to come through and the power is going to develop a little bit, which I think we can reasonably believe given his slugging numbers in the minors, then there's a lot to be optimistic about with Anthony Volpe. Oswald Peraza, again, the plate discipline is unbelievable. The on-base tool is incredible. For a guy who's hitting like 200, he's walking as much as he strikes out. He's getting on base something like 34-35% of the time. It's really impressive, and this is while he's playing really good defense at two positions that he really hasn't played in the major league level before. And then finally, you get to Oswaldo Cabrera, and he's been terrible this year. His quality of contact is awful. His expected stats are terrible. But he's more than doubled his ground ball to fly ball rate. If he just elevates a little bit, as we saw in one of the games against the Blue Jays where he just kept coming off left-handed and hitting lasers into the left center field gap, one of which was caught, one of which made it to the wall, you're going to be good. Because like that's the kind of thing he should be doing. When he elevates, he's a good hitter. When he doesn't elevate, he's a bad hitter. It's also true of every hitter in baseball. So Cabrera, if he gets back to what he was last year, we're golden. I think that those guys, between the three of them, could pretty easily average like a 105 WRC+. And given the quality of defense that each one of them is going to play and how much of an upgrade that would constitute over their current offensive outputs, that's going to be a major upgrade for this team. Each of those three rookies. And then finally, a stat that I found was the lineup that the Yankees put out on Sunday. The guys in that lineup were responsible for like 50% of the plate appearances in the ALCS and 54% of the plate appearances in the playoffs as a whole in 2022. So Don't believe anyone who tells you that the Yankees are running it back or doing the same thing every year. This is meaningfully different. They're deploying guys differently. They have clearly lost faith in Aaron Hicks. They haven't let IKF play the infield. Like, this is, they're making the moves that we want them to make. And when you have a bunch of guys who are like 21, 22, 23 years old that you're trying to work into your offense, it's going to take some time. There's going to be an adjustment period, but it's pretty clear to me that letting these guys figure it out, being patient and investing in them is the right way to go. And the pitching is going to keep this team afloat until such time as Harrison Bader gets back and gets in a groove. You know, a couple of the kids start hitting. Ultimately, Stanton comes back. Judge breaks out of his slump, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Like, I think people want to have it both ways with the lineup. Like, they want the prospects to come up and hit immediately. Where there has to be an adjustment period. And if you don't get the adjustment period now, if you pull, you know, bringing him up in August or September, then you're actually having your, you know, adjustment period during late season important games, the playoffs. Like, this is what the Yankees should be doing, and this has to happen at some point. And if you don't want it to happen, then you don't want those kids playing, and then we're right back where we were last year. And the Yankees weren't going to go out and get meaningfully better hitters. Like, those hitters just aren't out there. This is the best outcome for the Yankees, is being able to work these younger players up and have them do well. And, you know, yes, they could have signed Carlos Correa, but like, they weren't going to. They were going to play Anthony Volpe. And the way Correa's hitting, honestly, like, Volpe's been a better player this season. Like, you can check the stats if you don't believe me. But, like, I just think people were kind of their vision of what a lineup should be was clouded by the juice ball era, where, you know, you had nine guys who were all hitting 20 home runs, and that doesn't happen anymore. And that's not indicative of what a good offense can be. And that's not just apologizing for the Yankees offense. It's just saying the Yankees offense can be a really good offense, and not everybody is going to hit 30 home runs. And that's just the state of modern baseball. What you said is correct. Like, that's, some of those players will hit better, probably the Judges and, you know, Glabers. Maybe, you know, one of the Volpe, Peraza, Cabrera group doesn't hit better. But, like, that's baseball. The Yankees have the good players. They have the depth to cover for it. And like it or not about the 2022 trade deadline, they've shown recently that they're willing to go out and acquire pieces at the deadline. And, you know, it's April. Like, you know, there's going to be other players in the mix that we don't anticipate. I think for this current team, I'd much rather have the guys we have and want them to hit better versus, you know, talking every single week about how Isaiah Kiner-Falefa should not be playing shortstop, because that's all we did last spring.
It was exhausting.
I think the only reason that it was perceived differently is because the Yankees went on an unbelievable run of games and were just world beaters, but they had those problems. They're winning despite those problems. So, you know, that came back to bite them. At this point, like, this team is honestly set up better in some ways than last year's team was from the early months of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a question of philosophy, right? There were a ton of people for the last number of years who said, I don't like the way this Yankees team is structured. I don't like that the Yankees don't invest in their prospects. I don't like that the Yankees are okay with playing average defense. I don't like that the Yankees aren't fast. I want the Yankees to steal more bases. I want the Yankees to make more contact, blah, 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 blah. And they would see the Yankees hit a bunch of home runs and score a bunch of runs and go, this doesn't work in the playoffs. And then the Yankees would lose in the playoffs, either because of injuries or because the laws of physics stopped working or because their opponent was cheating or because they got out-homered by a team that was doing their approach better than they were doing it. And people would go, see, it doesn't work in the playoffs. And then the Yankees said, okay, we're going to switch things up. We're going to invest in our prospects. We're going to prioritize guys who make contact and steal bases. We are not going to pursue guys who are all about three true outcomes. We're going to make sure that guys are positioned optimally on defense. And now people are going, this team doesn't have an offense. Well, you can't have it both ways if one of the things that you've asked for is investment in young guys. Mm-hmm. You can have it both ways if you just say, look, I don't care what the slugging numbers are. I don't care what the run scoring numbers are. I just want you to optimize for contact. And then the Yankees can go out and they can trade for Luis Arraez and they can find a bunch of Isaiah Kiner's falefa. And, you know, they can do whatever is required to build a team that just makes all the contact in the world. And you can see what happens. But what the Yankees did is they responded to a lot of the things that people were mad about. And now those people who were mad about those things are just mad that the thing they wanted isn't actually playing out immediately the way they want it to. But, and if this were like, if Anthony Volpe and Oswald Peraza and Oswaldo Cabrera were all like 27 years old and had 4 years of major league experience and were doing this, it would be a different story. But those guys have under 400 combined major league plate appearances. And people are saying that Cabrera needs to be sent down and Volpe needs to be moved down in the lineup and this offense is doomed. Like, look, guys, you're talking about a team that's on pace to win 96 games that has done that primarily without Giancarlo Stanton or Jonathan Loaisiga, that has done that entirely without Harrison Bader, without Carlos Rodon, without Luis Severino. Like, this team is only going to get better. The kids are going to get better. Their teammates are going to get healthier. Some of their teammates are going to increase their output as well. Look at Aaron Judge. Look at Gleyber Torres. Like, I just don't understand how you can see a team that is winning games at the rate that this team is winning games in spite of the factors inhibiting it and go, yeah, this team is doomed. And I have a lot of your tweets bookmarked if you've been talking this way. Let me put that warning out there.
Yeah, and also, like, okay, going back to like the Correa-Volpe example, I mean, Correa has a 77 WRC plus and is worth exactly zero WAR. So then you're paying $30 million for a shortstop who's doing worse than the shortstop you had, and his ankle is, you know, on shaky ground. Like, the investment to older players comes with a risk, and it I think people think that there is a magic player out there who's going to make the Yankees all better and that the Yankees refuse to sign him, and that player is Aaron Judge, and they signed him. Like, there's no the Yankees have done, they have built this team. Like, they're, like you said, like, they've responded to their flaws. There are guys who are paid to take care of these problems. Like, it's not a bunch of people sitting around actively trying to make the Yankees worse. And I don't think that always leads to the right decisions. But sometimes I think people just need to step back and look at the larger picture and realize that this team isn't, quote unquote, running it back. And if you're giving up on this team now, you're basically saying there is no room for improvement. And that's just not the case with these young guys and with the players they have. I mean, like you said, like, there's so many reasons that this offense will improve. And I'm not going to sit here and say, like, the performance was acceptable offensively, but I think there's a difference between saying it was a disappointing weekend series for the offense against the Blue Jays versus saying I'm not feeling it for the Yankees this year, you know, as some people said on Twitter.
Yeah, it's look, Twitter is the home of overreaction. It is the breeding ground of insanity. It is the, you know, graveyard of intellectualism.
Elon's coming to trademark this.
There's a lot of just like brainless discourse that goes on there. And it's not flashy and it's not exciting all the time, but I think that's something that we try to cut against. And I was actually really pleased with the response that we got to a very positive tweet that I put out toward the end of the game on Sunday, where I said, you know, assuming a loss, the Yankees will be playing at a 96 win pace without Stanton, Loaisiga, Bader, Rodon, Severino, and routinely starting guys with fewer than 100 Major League Baseball plate appearances to invest in their development. They've only lost one series, and they've only played teams that were under 500 last year twice. Like, you just got to have some perspective. This is a team that is going to improve, a team that, like, you remember 2021, right? When they started 5-10 and got like embarrassed by the Rays in that early series at Yankee Stadium. And that team won what, 92 games and went to the playoffs and was like fundamentally flawed and bad in much more serious ways.
Yeah. Like we sat down in July and we were like, is this going to happen? I mean, like, if you want to look at a team that was built with that three true outcomes mentality in mind that doesn't do that, if you want to know, like, what the worst case scenario for that is, it's the 2021 Yankees. And I think you would rather, I know you all would rather much have this team, because this team's floor is, you know, the young athleticism, speed, adjustments with the bat, but, like, kind of what we're seeing now, they're growing pains. 2021 was what happens when, you know, a team is built in a flawed manner and just it all collapses at the same time. And even that team made the playoffs, but like it took some midseason Cashman doctoring to, you know, fix that. And I just don't even think, like, we're not in that panic mode. It's not going to, I mean, I know the playoffs are expanded, but like this team is just so much more structurally sound. Like, I sound like I'm talking about a building, but like it is, it really is. And like, yeah, 2021 was a dark time and we're not there. And I think people are still scarred by that. And I feel that, like, I'm still scarred by 2021, but like, it's okay. We can move on.
Yeah. This, like, bottom line, this team is meaningfully better than a team that won 92 games. Like, that's the takeaway here. That's the punchline. That's what you need to remember. They're 22 games into the season. They're playing well. Whipple, we just had a great interview with number one Pete Alonso hater, number one DJ LeMahieu fan, Joey at DJ LeMVP on Twitter. I had a ton of fun talking to him. It was his podcast debut, so Yankees Files is honored to have hosted that. What did you think about the conversation we had with Joey?
Dude, Joey's awesome. I had such a fun time. I mean, the guy just like he wasn't, we were on video and he wasn't, but like, I think you could feel, like, I could see him smiling in front of us. Like, he just radiates energy, and I just loved hearing about his experiences with DJ LeMahieu, Yankees baseball, and bananas. Not necessarily in that order, but I had a blast. I can't wait for people to hear it.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun. So without any further ado, we'll throw it to our interview with Joey. All right, and we are back with a very special guest. You may know him as Playoff Joey. You may know him as Offseason Joey. You may know him as DJ LeMVP. You may know him as the biggest Pete Alonso hater of the year. You may know him as the Crown Prince of Yankees Twitter. There are all kinds of titles running around. We know him as Joey. Joey, it's great to have you on the Yankees Files podcast. Welcome.
Thank you guys so much. It's a pleasure to be here and making my podcast debut. I wouldn't want a better pod to start with.
Well, we're honored to be the place where you make your podcast debut. Hopefully the first of many appearances. So I'm going to start back last year. I think it was shortly after the trade deadline is when I became aware of you on Twitter. And you may remember this, you may not. You were making the Efros Fitzgerald, Mark Wahlberg movie Ted joke on Twitter, and you made that great video that you only got to use for like 3 days because then Efros got hurt. But at that moment, I was like, ooh, this guy's onto something. And you've been on like a rocket to the moon since then. So talk us through the way you've grown this DJ LeMahieu loving, content creating, Mark Wahlberg invoking brand on Yankees Twitter.
So I'll start from the beginning and we'll get back to the Scott Efros video, because I do feel like I jinxed him a little bit. So I didn't know that sports Twitter was a thing. I was in a few different group chats with some friends and they were getting a little sick of my shtick. So I said, you know what, let me make a Twitter and I'll just throw my thoughts out there. I didn't really know the sports online sports community. And then I kind of picked up on it and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then I kind of learned how to edit videos on the fly very, very poorly, but still, you know, for fun. And it all just kind of came together. You know, I try to be myself. I try to be funny and I just try to let it let it rip. I grew up with a dad that has nicknames for everybody. I'm sure we all have dads like that, goofy dad jokes and stuff. So, you know, every friend of mine has a nickname. Every girlfriend has a nickname, or ex-girlfriend has a nickname. You know, I kind of started doing that with the players, and Scott Efros, when we got him, I was like, all right, I got to think of something good here. And I was watching Ted, and that scene that you mentioned came on, and I was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. Cause I quote that, we quote that at home all the time. And I was like, dude, this is like perfect. So I think I messaged you guys actually about it. And I was like, I'm putting this together. Like, I'm really proud of it. And yeah, so that's kind of how that video came out. And then I just kind of started just letting it rip. I've always been really quick with it, but it's so nice to see that people enjoy it. And, you know, you throw stuff out in the void, and sometimes the void talks back, you know?
I mean, I would hate to say that you were the one who cursed the 2022 Yankees deadline. I think there's ample evidence of other curses on other players, but I'd love to know how specifically you gravitated towards DJ LeMahieu. You know, what, you know, when he signed with the Yankees, were you just instantly in love, or is it something you developed an affinity for him over time? And just describe, like, I guess, your history with DJ.
So that's an awesome question. And I get asked that actually fairly regularly now, which is kind of cool. And I love that people kind of associate me with him. But if you love baseball, DJ LeMahieu has to be your guy, because he's a ball player's ball player. He just always wants to play, always wants to hit. I'm sure you guys have seen me freak out on Twitter. He plays gold glove defense at three infield positions, batting title. I like home runs, but he plays baseball the right way for me. And I knew about him back in high school, like 2011, 2012. And then when he came to the Yankees, I was over the moon. You can't see me right now, but I'm grinning ear to ear about it. It was like so exciting. And, you know, that 2019 home run in the ALCS was the highest of highs, followed by the lowest of lows, probably, 10 minutes later?
Yeah.
But he's my favorite, and I'll die on that hill. That is my guy.
Are you buying into this new 28% strikeouts but slugs 500 version of DJ LeMahieu, or is this bringing up some conflict for you?
It's a little hard, but you know what? He's been producing so far this year, and as I say, you know, a healthy DJ transforms the lineup. And he's the kind of guy that's like, whatever he has to do to win. And I'm speaking for him because he doesn't speak, but like,
he needs someone to speak for him.
We can talk about that in a minute, but yeah, I mean, I think he just wants to win just like the rest of the guys. And yeah, I think he really just sets the example for our offense. And he's really the X factor, in my opinion. And go ahead.
It's kind of funny. I mean, you mentioned that, you know, you seem like a very outgoing person, and you've gravitated towards a machine. So I think the contrast is kind of funny here.
Yeah. I mean, that is like, I couldn't have picked a better ball player. I was actually having this talk with my dad over the weekend when I got back from the game, and he said, you know, the guy's like a blank piece of paper. There's nothing to him. And I kind of, if you ever see those Key and Peele sketches, where they had the Obama translator.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of like how I feel like I serve for DJ.
I think you're right. I really hope that he is like aware of this, whether he's aware of you individually or not. I hope he's aware of this like meme discourse about him and like the LeBeat Boop stuff and like, because I feel like he might exist not even knowing that Twitter is a thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I wonder, I need there to be an avenue, I don't know what it is, for someone to like ask him and him to speak candidly about like the way Yankees Twitter has just like memed him into oblivion. Because like, no human as like, emotionless and uninteresting as he like appears and I think probably tries to be. Like, no human is the person that DJ LeMahieu has become on Yankees Twitter, and I really want to know what he thinks of it.
You know, it's funny. I was out to dinner with my family 2 weeks ago, and my mom just, you know, because my Twitter persona is a topic of conversation when we go out now, which is kind of funny. But my mom was like, does he know you exist? I was like, gosh, that's a great question. Yeah, I would love to hear what he has to say. I mean, it would probably just be like his interview he had the other day, where it's like four words. He'd probably just say, okay, cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, he's just, less is more with him, I feel. And again, speaking for him, but like, yeah, I would love to hear what he has to say about it. Like, that's, I get nervous that some of the players' burners follow me.
Oh, see, concern? I'm excited if at the prospect of that. Like, I want that. I invite.
You guys have evidence of this? This is the first time hearing of burners.
I mean, I don't have any evidence of it, but you know, we all kind of, it's speculative, but everybody is. They have burners.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant's like, got like 20 of them, so I'm sure someone on the Yankees has one. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. No, they've got it. They've got it. So Joey, this is a good time, I think, for us to segue. You were at the LeMahieu pinch hit walk-off game the other day, and you know, Whipple and I have both had experiences seeing our favorite players do extraordinary or exciting things in person, which is, I think, like, so different from watching it on TV. Like, you know, I saw Gary Sanchez catch a ball off the backstop and throw out Tony Kemp at third base in a game that Glaber ended up walking off. And Whipple saw like Jeter come back and homer on the first pitch that time after he was hurt. And it's such an exciting thing. And the video that you posted of your reaction live to the walk-off, I thought was so cool and just such like a pure expression of what it's like to be a sports fan and see like the guy you are rooting for, you know, have a moment like that in person. Take us through what it was like in that moment, being in the stadium, watching him walk off the Blue Jays like that.
So I was annoyed on my way into the stadium, actually, because I was looking at the lineup and I was like, he's not like, are you serious? Like, I want to see my guy play every, and I love Cole too. Cole's probably my second favorite Yankee. So I was excited to see him pitch, but when DJ's not in the lineup, I'm like a little annoyed. So, you know, we're watching the game and I had no idea I was being recorded. My my friend that was with me pulled her phone out because she knew, like, when we saw DJ in the on deck circle, she was like, this is going to be good.
Okay.
So I'm standing there anxiously as you guys saw the video, and I was like, just don't strike out and don't hit into a double play.
Fair.
Ball goes through the infield, and it was like a top five moment at the stadium for me, probably. That was awesome. Like, I lost it. That was pure exhilaration. And you're right, that was all genuine. I wasn't play it up on Twitter. Sometimes my videos are kind of funny, but like, that was a genuine, like, off the wall reaction. I don't think I got home that night until like midnight. Like, I stayed out and just celebrated. Like, it was almost like we clinched the division. Like, I was just thrilled. And that's going to be a moment that's definitely going to sit with me for a while. I mean, I've seen walk-offs. I've seen a lot of great games in my life, but that was a special, because that was my first time seeing him walk anything off in person.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that he wasn't even playing and came in and did that is pretty awesome. And like Will said, I mean, my favorite player is Gerrit Cole, so I'm right there with you. But it's really, seeing a pitcher do well is fun, and there's exciting moments. But I really don't think there's anything like the walk-off single or walk-off home run in baseball. And I get the exhilaration. I mean, I was at Glaber's walk-off home run on Mother's Day last year and filmed myself. And I think my brother asked, like, I've never been that, or he told me when he saw the video, he's like, I've never been that excited about anything in my life ever. I'm like, and you're not living. You're not living, Chris.
Chris Whipple, please experience joy one time.
But Joey, so you've been to a lot of games. I mean, just on the topic of great moments, like, what do you think is the best moment you've seen live? I mean, we, you know, shared a few, but what's like your all-time Yankees moment?
So there's, if I can give you three, because they rotate. My first playoff game in 2017 was game four of the ALDS against Cleveland.
Oh, man.
And Seve was on the mound, and it was against Bauer. I was in college, and I skipped my night class, picked my buddy up. My buddy drove all the way out from Pittsburgh. It was like a crate. We got there, got in. The place was rocking. And it was like, that was just such a special feeling for me because I was an adult and it was my first playoff game. And it was just when Seve struck out, I think it was Kipnis. I'm sure you guys see the clip where he did the big fist pump and the chain come out. And like, nope. I was like, ravenous. That was awesome. Another one was probably game five of the ALDS last year. Now that was kind of bittersweet. That was one of those goofballs jumping around in the street afterwards yelling, "We want you know who." But I mean, the place was rocking. It was awesome. And Miles Straw, I have a bone to pick with Miles Straw because I was also at that game last year.
Oh man.
Yeah, it was, I don't like Miles Straw. If he's listening, I'm sure he's a good guy, but like, I don't like Miles Straw.
Oh, we have it on good authority that Miles Straw is listening. Here's the thing. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I got to get this out there. I got to get out there. Miles Straw and any athlete who finds himself in that situation, it's so easy to say, "Hit me, MF-er, come on, hit me," when you know that you can say anything to the person, and if they do hit you, they're getting arrested, and then if you hit them back, nothing's happening to you. Like, real cool Miles Straw. Like, yeah, sure, I'm sure there were some people saying some stuff to Stephen Kwan that they shouldn't have been saying, but Miles Straw did not look tough yelling at random Yankees fans to hit him, and I really think Miles Straw thinks Miles Straw looked tough, and I got to get that out there.
No, hey, listen, I agree. I mean, listen, that's kind of like when Anthony Rendon this year grabbed that A's fan.
Yeah.
Took a swing at him. I mean, another swing and a miss by Rendon, but that joke's been done a million times to death. I know, big listener of the show as well. Sorry, I lost track of thought here. Straw, yeah, I don't know. Like, that just wasn't cool. It was for my friend's birthday. His birthday was actually yesterday. Shout out, Nikki. Good luck with the kid. His girlfriend's going to have a kid in a few weeks, so that's pretty cool.
Good luck with the kid.
Yeah, he's a girl dad, so we've been ribbing him. But and then my third game. Probably, let's get back to that one. I'll give you guys a third one in a little bit.
You don't have to have a third one.
Two is great. Okay.
So, Joey, I noticed you gained a lot of notoriety on Twitter over the winter in your off-season Joey persona with some bits involving some either unaffiliated or minor league baseball teams associated with foods. And I think for any of our listeners who are not up to speed with what I'm talking about, it would be great to hear about your culinary and baseball endeavors over the off season, because I found this very entertaining.
Okay, so to recap, the Portland Pickles and Savannah Bananas are the two aforementioned culinary minor league affiliates, and I think they're pretty funny, and I like what they do. And I woke up one day and I said, you know what would be funny, because I eat a banana every day anyway, I said, you know,
Garrett Cole style,
literally just like Garrett. And I said, you know what would be funny, like, how many likes, like, if I added them, what would it take for them to see this and follow me? Because, you know, they have over, I think, over 100,000 followers or something. You know, I figured, let's see. So I tweeted it out. Immediately, I said, you know what? The Portland Pickles might respond too, because they get kind of into that meme kind of stuff. So I added them as well. And 62 was the number when the Savannah Bananas followed me, which I thought was kind of cool for, you know, the 62 Judge home runs.
Very nice.
And I was like, all right, this is like perfect. We're going to get into this. And then, you know, it didn't like I first one, people went crazy. And by like the eighth or ninth one, I was talking to them. They're great people, the Savannah Bananas. Like their social media person is excellent. And then I got a little bit, I changed, some stuff happened at home. I had to change some stuff around, but I did announce recently, I don't know if you guys saw, that I'm going to come out of retirement and pick up the banana slack for the rest of the year. Big announcement.
That's you heard it here. Not necessarily first, but you did hear it here on the Yankee
Smiles
podcast.
You heard
it
first here. So yeah, I'm gonna pick that up. But it was just kind of a silly, goofy idea that I didn't necessarily think would pick up. But you know what? I gotta change my name. So I went from Off-Season Joey to Potassium Prince. Potassium Prince Joe, Prince of Potassium Joey. And yep. Been called Banana Boy in several group chats now, and that's still a running joke, like to this day. But I just thought it was kind of fun, and it was nice to see it pick up and people enjoy it. And now it's a bit of a meme on Yankee Twitter, which is cool.
Do you think you'll go to a game or at some point?
Oh, a Savannah Banana game? I'd like to. I know the tickets are really hard to get. I'd like to go. I know they're in Massachusetts in August, they told me. So I might make I have a buddy that lives in Boston. I might make a ride up there and try to reach out and talk to them. But that would be really
cool. I feel
like
they owe you at this point.
Maybe.
For your commitment to the fruit game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was keeping them relevant for forever. I'm kidding. You guys are awesome. I won't clip that.
Don't worry. All right. We're approaching game time in Minnesota, okay. So we won't keep you too much longer, Joey. But one thing that we do on every episode of the podcast is we rate our confidence out of 10 in this year's iteration of the Yankees. And frankly, we've allowed that to mean whatever people want it to mean. We've only had one guest refuse to do it, which was Hoodie Allen. Hoodie Allen, you're a coward for not rating your confidence. My dad, a frequent guest, was a pretty hard grader. And look, you can define your own rubric, and you can justify your score however you want. But as it stands on April 24th, before the Yankees score 25 runs off Sonny Gray, how are you feeling about the 2023 New York Yankees 1-10?
So I'll preface this with, if everybody comes back healthy, I said it yesterday, actually. I think the kids are going to get better.
Agree.
Confident. I'm a believer. I mean, I was all in last year. If you had asked me last year, I would have said in 11. But
so did
you know, if we're talking about getting to the Fall Classic and you know, winning this whole thing, right now I know we're a little panicked because we dropped our first series of the year. But I'm gonna give the boys a 7.5 out of 10. I'm a believer. I want to stay positive. I'm trying to stay confident, and I think the boys will pull through.
I love it. All right, so Joey, really enjoyed having you on the Yankees Files podcast. Glad this was the place you selected to make your podcast debut. Let people know where they can find you.
You can just find me on Twitter, really. I don't really do anything else, but it's just at DJLaMVP. I might make a TikTok. I might try to do YouTube. I'm not sure yet. Hopefully, if you guys have me on again, I'll shout that out if it's down the line.
Sounds great. Well, as you go off to build your multimedia empire, we're going to get back to the rest of this episode. Joey, really enjoyed it and can't wait to have you back on again soon.
Thanks, Joey.
Sounds good. Thank you guys so much.
And we are back. Thanks again to Joey for coming on the show. You can find him on Twitter at DJLaMVP, which is where he does all his stuff. And I can't imagine there are too many of you out there that follow us and not him, but if there are any, give him the follow. He's a great one. Whipple, we heard that Joey's at a 7.5 out of 10 with this team on the confidence scale. It's time for us to rate our confidence. It was a rough week. To the extent that this team has rough weeks, not really hitting, going 500. There were some positives to take away. Glaber appears to have maybe started to break out of his slump a little bit. He had the walk-off sack fly against the Angels. DJ obviously walked off the Jays in the Manoah Cole game. You were up to, what, 9, 9.5 last week. Where are you going to be this time?
I mean, probably come down a little bit, but again, like, my fundamental idea of what this Yankees team is hasn't changed that much. And I think people, like we just spent 25 minutes talking about, think it has changed a lot more than it really has. I still believe in this team for all the same reasons. I mean, I would like to see them hit, and I don't really know, you know, it's tough in the early going, because, you know, it's still a long season, and we've seen great things from this team, and we've seen some not so great things. So I'm going to go down to a 9. Just because, you know, it's tough to watch the offense go cold for a week. And, you know, I still feel like I'm in that 9 to 10 range. I mean, like, I don't think that between 9 and 10 to me means, like, I think this team is a World Series contender as currently built. And, like, nothing about that has changed. I think that was the whole point of our conversation earlier. Like, this, the way that I feel about this collection of guys, both on the team and injured coming back to the team, it doesn't make me think that they're not one of the best teams in the American League. And when the Rays actually decide to play real Major League Baseball teams, other than the Blue Jays, who they lost 2 of 3 against, I think we're going to see that actually play out. And, you know, things will, they'll come back to earth, and the Yankees will bump up a bit. Like, we've seen this before, you know. I'm going to go with what, you know, history tells me, is that this team's going to have a chance to contend for the World Series, and these guys can help them do it. And it's April, and I still feel that way. So I'm going to go down slightly to a 9, but that's honestly, I think, a lot higher than people still have them.
Yeah, I'm with you at a 9. You know, we got the news that Harrison Bader should be back in, it sounds like, maybe about 10 days, which is exciting. That will spell the end for either Aaron Hicks or Willie Calhoun, which is, you know, overdue, and that will be good. Luis Severino's been throwing without pain. It sounds like the Carlos Rodon setback news was potentially overblown. So you got to feel good about the, you know, the reinforcements the Yankees have coming. As we discussed on the earlier part of the podcast, you got to feel good, or at least there are plenty of reasons to feel good and feel optimistic about what the kids in particular will be able to provide. You know, I said on TikTok, like, even if Jose Trevino can't hit, he's not a 54 WRC plus hitter. Even if Oswaldo Cabrera has regressed significantly, he's not a 48 WRC plus hitter. You know, take all those things together, and there's a lot to be optimistic about with this team. Especially, we haven't seen the best of Judge yet. We, you know, maybe haven't seen the best of DJ yet from a, like, complete profile perspective. We haven't seen the best of Glaber yet, over more than a few games. There's just a lot to like. You know, Stanton's going to come back in, you know, whatever it ends up being, a month and a half. I expect that the team will ultimately go on and make upgrades. But as I said on Twitter, like, there was a lot of discourse about how the optimal lineup for this team today can't win the World Series. And those people could not be more wrong. Unless you believe that every single person on this team is a finished product and their exact level of production through 22 games this year is the player that they're going to be for the next 140, which is an asinine thing to believe, then, like, you should be optimistic. Like, there's no way you can go, okay, the Yankees, as they've played through these first 22 games, are what they are, and I expect them to get worse. Like, there's not a coherent point of view that leads you to that conclusion. So if you take these 22 games where they're winning at a 96 win pace, and then you assume that they're going to get better because all the signs point to them getting better, whether it's improvement from the guys who are healthy or returns from the guys who aren't, How can you not be confident? I'm sticking at a 9.
Yeah. No notes. Agreed.
Thank you. You've been telling me I'm right a lot on this podcast. I'm a big fan of that.
I think it's because I said one thing about Andrew Benintendi, and sadly, I'm sitting in class, and all of a sudden I get like 20 text messages. I'm like, I can't deal with this. So maybe it's just a strategic, strategically placating you to save my phone. But I do think Andrew Benintendi was a dark moment for this podcast.
Yeah,
I don't really want to go down that road again. So I think I'll just say I'm glad he is where he is, and I'm glad that you're being retroactively proven right.
So before we wrap up here, I do want to acknowledge that in the Saturday game, I made one of the worst calls that I've ever made. Anthony Volpe came up with Oswald Peraza on base and in the bottom of the eighth inning against Yimi Garcia. And I said that I thought the Yankees should pinch hit LeMahieu for Volpe. And I maintain that it was sound thinking. Like, it makes sense. You have this very good hitter on the bench. The guy who's up is hitting 187. It's this good reliever that he's never seen before. He hasn't shown any ability to slug really this year. Like, the process made sense. The second I tweeted it, Volpe puts the ball in the right field seats. Yankees take a 2-0 lead. Ultimately, those runs were critical because the Yankees didn't score again until extra innings. And Wandy allowed that home run to Danny Jansen in the next half inning. So one of the worst calls I have ever made. I acknowledged it immediately. I said, this is the worst thing I've ever tweeted about my tweet that LeMahieu should be hitting in Volpe's spot. And then, of course, I was proven extra wrong because LeMahieu being on the bench and available to pinch hit ultimately won the Yankees the game when he was able to take that at bat with the bases loaded. So I was wrong on multiple levels, and I'm sorry for it. And I needed to come on the podcast and acknowledge it in the spirit of accountability. This is how we run this operation here at Yankees Files. And I'm sorry, and I'm going to try to do better in the future.
You did say that by saying that you willed it to happen. So you, even when he's wrong, he's right.
Okay. I do feel like I willed it to happen. It's like the number of times that I tweet something negative about Kyle Higashioka and then he like doubles like that kind of happens a lot. And then the other day
is unreal. You gotta chill with that.
The other day in the Gausman game, I was like, oh, this feels like one of those classic Kyle Higashioka hits a home run games, because I was thinking about that one game against Scherzer in 2021. And of course, like, Higashioka was made to look silly for the entire game.
I went to one of those games because he homered off McClanahan. Kyle Higashioka is a perfectly acceptable backup catcher, and
okay,
I think
let's
need to
yeah no he's a perfectly acceptable backup catcher, but like
he's
backup
not starting
catchers,
over yeah
backup
he's not starting
catchers
over
are
Gary
awful.
Sanchez he's not starting over Gary Sanchez anymore. That was another true. Dark moment for the pod, although I didn't really agree with that either, but anyway,
thank goodness.
I think
Whipple,
it's time to go.
it is time for us to wrap up. Any parting shots from you?
I just unloaded all of my parting shots, so I'll spare you. No more.
All right. So as we mentioned, people can follow us on Twitter where we're at Yankees Files. They can read the blog and keep up with, frankly, like pretty much everything we're doing at YankeesFiles.com. We are also recently on TikTok where we're at Yankees Files Podcast. I've been doing a lot of work there, trolling some Astros fans, trolling some Blue Jays fans. It's been an awfully fun time. So please check us out. Give us some likes and follows over there. The podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any of the other apps that I don't really know what they are. If you're enjoying it, we hope you'll like and subscribe and rate and do whatever the things you can do to podcasts. If you don't like it, we hope you only subscribe. Do not give us bad ratings on the podcast. It's a good podcast. You know that. We'll be back here again next week to recap the series that the Yankees play with the Twins and the Rangers, potentially with another first-time special guest. So keep your eyes out for that one. And until then, let's go Yankees.